Thank you guys for coming today. Today I'm going to be presenting part of my master's research. I'm a master's student at Purdue University, and my presentation is over assessing the link between soil health and water quality in the St. Joseph watershed. So to start off with, a brief introduction. As I'm sure many of you guys are aware, the quality of water and bodies of water such as rivers is vital, especially when they act as the main source for drinking water. According to the EPA, agriculture is the leading contributor to water pollution, accounting for the two largest non-point sources, which are sediment and nutrients. It is believed that a healthier soil contributes to not only a higher production potential for farmers, but also to improving environmental concerns such as water quality. However, there has been little research done looking into the direct effects impacts that soil properties have on water quality at the field level. Therefore, the main objective of my research is to assess the soil health parameters at the landscape scale and to identify if these parameters in fact affect water quality. This study is taking place over 2 years, between 2013 and 2014. Since the water and soil data for the current year is still being collected and processed, I will only be presenting the results or the data and results for the first year, which is 2013. This field scale study is located in the St. Joseph watershed, which is in the northeastern part of Indiana, as you can see on this map. This watershed is important because the St. Joseph River provides drinking water to the city of Fort Wayne, Indiana, which has over 200,000 residents. There are three sites that are being used for this study, ranging in size from 2.2 to 4 hectares. The first site has been no-tilled for 28 years and is under a corn-soybean rotation. The second site is also under a corn-soybean rotation, however, it has been tilled before corn since 2004. And the last site is in an 8-year rotation between corn, soybeans, oats, wheat, and alfalfa, and it is continuously tilled using chisel and disc tillage. The 2013 crop for all three of these sites was soybean. Each of these sites is equipped with solar-powered ISCO samplers, which are used to collect both surface runoff as well as subsurface tile drainage every 30 minutes during a rainfall event. And for this study, the water samples are collected between April and November. And in 2013, there were a total of 14 rainfall events during this time frame. The average annual rainfall between these three sites was 723.5 millimeters, which is pretty average for this area. In the top picture, you can see what one of the sites looks like with the ISCO samplers. And the bottom picture is of the drop box weir, which is used to collect surface runoff. So the water quality samples that are collected are brought back to the lab and analyzed for the nutrients of soluble and total phosphorus, as well as nitrate and ammonium. The total sediment loss is also calculated from these samples as well. The soil for this study is collected from 15 different sites, or 15 different locations in each site, and it was collected after harvest, which was in November of last year, and is also going to be in November of this year as well. For analysis purposes, the samples were subdivided into two depths, a surface depth of 0 to 5 centimeters and a subsurface depth of 5 to 20 centimeters. So in order to determine how healthy a soil is, several physical, chemical, and biological properties are measured. The physical properties being used for this study are surface bulk density using the core method, aggregate stability using a wet sieve method, moisture and texture using the Malvern pipette method. The chemical properties being measured are extractable nutrients, which is ammonium, nitrate, phosphorus, and potassium. The total carbon-nitrogen ratio, pH, and EC are also being measured. For the biological properties, organic matter, nitrogen mineralization, and microbial respiration are being considered. So now I've told you about the methods for this study. I'm going to discuss the preliminary results. So to begin with, the first And one of the more important properties to look at is texture. Texture is important because it's an inherent property, yet it remains unchanged by management practices. So, for instance, a soil that has a high percent clay is expected to have a lower bulk density regardless of the management practice it's under. In comparing the texture between the three sites, we can see that the average percent sand, silt, and clay varies only slightly. In fact, the only significant difference is in the no-till surface soil, which has a significantly higher percent sand and lower percent silt as compared to the other sites. This slight difference suggests a good basis for comparing the other soil parameters between these sites. In looking at the bulk density versus the discharge, we can see that given the bulk density, the discharge makes logical sense for this study, for these sites. The no-till has both the significantly higher bulk density as well as the highest surface runoff. This site also has a greater surface runoff compared to tile flow, which is consistent with having a higher bulk density. Both the rotational till and conventional till sites have higher tile flow compared to the surface runoff, which is also consistent with having a lower bulk density. And while I'm on this slide, I would like to note that the rotational tillage has the greatest overall discharge. This is important, and I will refer back to this when I talk about the nutrients for this study. So in comparing the aggregate stability versus the sediment loss, we know that the aggregate stability is an indicator of how well the soil resists being degraded by water. Therefore, the significantly higher aggregate stability for the conventional till site would suggest that this site would also have the lowest amount of sediment loss. However, as you can see, this is not the case. In fact, the two graphs are inversely related, and the conventional tillage has the highest sediment loss. This suggests that the sediment load may be more dependent on other factors, such as the amount of residue being left on the surface for the other sites. In comparing the soil phosphorus versus the phosphorus load, we see that there is no significant difference in the amount of phosphorus in the soil. Therefore, the differences seen in the phosphorus load cannot be explained by the differences in the soil. However, in looking at the phosphorus load, we see that the rotational tillage has the highest, is the highest between the sites. And so this brings up the question, is discharge affecting the phosphorus load? Because as I mentioned before, this site also has the highest discharge rate. So in order to look at that, we look at the flow-weighted concentration, and we see that the rotational tillage still has the highest phosphorus concentration, so therefore the excess water is not responsible for the differences as well. We do know, however, that the phosphorus has little mobility in the soil, and in the absence of tillage, phosphorus remains on the surface and is more susceptible to runoff, which can explain why no-till has both a higher phosphorus load as well as phosphorus concentration. In comparing the results for the soil nitrogen versus the nitrogen load, like the phosphorus, we see that there is no significant difference in the soil ammonium. However, the conventional tillage site has a significantly higher nitrate for both depths. And then in looking at the nitrogen load, we once again see that the rotational tillage has the highest nitrogen load for this between the sites. And so in taking into account the discharge rate, we see that the conventional tillage now has the highest flow-weighted concentration. Therefore, and as expected, the discharge or the excess water is responsible for movement of nitrogen. So the conventional tillage has both the significantly highest nitrate in the soil as well as nitrogen concentration. The final results to look at are for the biological parameters. There is no significant difference in the amount of organic matter between the sites. However, both the microbial respiration as well as the nitrogen mineralization were significantly higher for both depths of the conventional tilled site. The significantly higher nitrogen mineralization for the conventional tilled site would suggest that could also be a factor in the higher nitrogen for the conventional till site as well. So the preliminary conclusions, with just 1 year of data for this study, is that the differences in sediment loss between management practices may be more dependent on the amount of residue cover than on the soil parameters themselves. We see this with, even with the highest bulk density and the lowest aggregate stability, the no-till site still had the lowest amount of sediment loss. There does appear to be some sort of link between soil parameters and water quality at the field level. We see this with the bulk density versus the discharge, and the soil nitrate, the nitrogen mineralization versus the N concentration. However, another year of data is still needed to draw more significant conclusions, and further research looking into the fertilizer application and individual events is also going to be done in the next year. So thank you.
Do we have any questions?
Nice work. The one thing that you can't separate, I think, is that if you're all in soybean things that you're looking at, but the crop rotation is a lot different in the till than it was in the no-till or the produced till.
Mm-hmm.
So what, do you have any thoughts on that? Because rather than being a tillage-driven difference, could it also be a crop rotation?
Yeah, it could also be a crop rotation. And actually, another part of my research is looking at the differences in the cropping system. So I do have an alfalfa field as well as a corn field that I'm looking at that I collected data from. However, there's not water data for these as well. So.
Yeah. I have two questions for you. Mm-hmm. Number one is that what makes you to separate 0 to 5 centimeters and 5 to 40 centimeters? You know, to me that 0 to 5 centimeters is shallow. That's one curiosity. The second thing is that no-till systems are normally thought of having low bulk density than the conventional system.
Mm-hmm.
But in your data, it's really worse, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Can you explain more?
So for the two different depths, it's
right.
Just...
Oh, go ahead. Yeah.
Yeah, so it's just based off of, for analysis purposes, the top depth is expected to have more nutrients and such, so that's why we separated them that way. And then... yeah, the no-till having a higher bulk density was unexpected, but,
Yeah, can you explain that? Why do you need that higher bulk density than conventional system?
Good question. It's no-till, so I feel like the surface is going to have higher bulk density, whereas if we would take bulk density further down, it wouldn't have higher bulk density. It hasn't been disturbed for 28 years, and so the compaction could play a factor in that as well. So.
About 6 to 8 years ago, that no-till farmer applied all the nitrogen at the same time as planting, so he had a lot of, not only was it wheel traffic there, but it was very heavy wheel traffic because of the amount of mass he was moving with that single pass. So that caused some bulk density issues. He's aware of that, and that's quite a long way from
the no-till and the conventional till. You're talking about only surface runoff. You're not talking about subsurface, right? You're only talking about surface.
Surface runoff as well as tile flow.
And tile flow.
Mm-hmm.
So in tile flow, is that no-till got more or less? I think. Mm-hmm.
Go back here.
So, okay, no deal with height, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and actually, so we do have data from back to 2004, well, 2008 with the tile flow, and looking back, usually the conventional tillage has a higher infiltration rate compared to the other ones for previous years, so that's why we're doing this study for more than 1 year.
You say the conventional has higher infiltration rate. Your no-till subsurface flow is higher, right?
Mm-hmm.
Normally, because of they have a lot of macrophore, you know, earthworm and all that kind of stuff, that's what we found too. No-till subsurface flow is much higher than conventional till. That's because of all of this macrophore flow. So normally, at the same time, they will bring the nitrate and all that. So our thought is if you've got long-term no-till, you want to reduce that, occasionally you should have, surface very light to cut up that channel mm-hmm. and reduce that kind of nitrogen going down to the subsurface.
All right, any other questions? If not, let's give Kelsey another hand for